He built perseverance through adversity and wound up excelling on the basketball court and the business world. Cut three times, that's right, three times by his high school basketball coach, he didn't give up, and he made the team his senior year. He wound up starting on one of the greatest teams in Indiana's basketball history, a team that went undefeated and won a state championship. He went on to earn a scholarship to play basketball in college, becoming the first member of his family to go to college, and later caught on briefly with the Pacers. He played a season in Europe before an injury contributed to the end of his professional career. But that led to a successful career in the corporate world, where he's now a senior vice president of human resources. I'm Mark Monteith, and I'm going one-on-one with Wayne Pack.
This is One-on-One with Mark Monteith on 1070 The Fan. Brought to you by Georgetown Market, Indy's family-owned natural food store since 1973. Movie Time Video Productions, they make your memories last forever. Pita Pit, have you had your pita today?
All right, today One-on-One comes to you from the fourth floor studio at Emmis Communications, and we're here today with Wayne Pack, and longtime Indiana high school basketball fans are certainly aware of the name of Wayne Pack, a member of the 1969 Washington High School State Championship team, one of the few teams to go undefeated and win a state championship in the history of Indiana basketball. And Wayne, you got a great story to tell beyond just basketball, I know, and but growing up in Indianapolis, what were your beginnings with basketball? You know, what got you started with the sport, and what helped you develop a love for the sport?
Well, really, it was just, you know, we grew up in Hallville on the west side of Indianapolis. And, you know, it was a neighborhood where, you know, you just played sports. I mean, you know, we didn't have Wii's and, you know, Twitter and, you know, Facebook and things like that. And so you either played basketball, baseball, football, but you played some sport. And I pretty much tried my hand at just about all of them. And for some reason, I just really took to basketball. It's just something that I would get up every morning and go and play, and I would play all day, and I just loved playing the game.
Where did you play?
We played all over. We played anywhere we could. We played, there were a couple of guys that had a basketball goal, you know, in their backyard, you know, nailed to a tree or on a post or whatever. We played in the alleys. We went to the park and played. We just played anywhere that there was a hoop.
Are we talking about, you know, 10 guys getting together playing a full court game, or is it 2-on-2? Is it, you know, how are you playing? What kind of
a group of guys would gather and you would start playing. Usually it was like probably, you know, 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 or something like that. But there were probably 30 guys in the backyard, and sometimes you would go, and if you weren't any good, you never got to play. You just stood around and watched. But when you started developing a reputation for yourself, then, you know, you could get out there and play.
And you grew up near George McGinnis, who people know, of course, Mr. Basketball in 1969, great career with the Pacers and so forth. Was he in your neighborhood all along as well? I mean, did you guys grow up together as little kids, or did he come along later?
Well, George grew up actually over on the west side near New York Street and over there. But then he moved to Hallville when we were getting ready to go in high school. So I actually grew up as a kid with Steve Downey.
Okay.
Steve and I, who also lived right around the corner from me, you know, we grew up from the time that we went to grade school, to elementary school together. And then George moved out, and George and I were one street over from one another, and we just developed a friendship and started playing basketball and that.
Just so people understand, when you say Hallville, what area is that? Because it's not really known as that specifically today, I don't think.
Yeah, it's pretty much bordered by White River to the east, and probably Tibbs Avenue to the west, probably from about 16th Street to the north down to probably Michigan Street to the south.
And what did your dad do?
My dad worked for years at IU Med Center as an animal caretaker. And
okay.
My mother worked at IU Med Center as well for years. Both of them retired from there. She worked in the laboratories.
Now, Washington won the state championship in 1965. You would have been an eighth grader then. Did you go to those games? And what do you remember from that?
Well, I couldn't afford to go to the games.
Really?
But I certainly remember watching, Billy Keller, Marv Winkler, Ralph Taylor, Eddie Bopp, Larry Highball. I mean, I could name that entire team. These guys went through the state. I forget what they were actually rated, but they were rated very highly, and they marched through the state, and I just figured that they were going to win it. I believe they were going to win it, and saw a lot of those guys around Hallville and what have you, and when they won the state, it was just thrilling, to sit there and watch as a kid. Also knowing that I was going to be going to Washington at that time, I mean, it was just thrilling.
Yeah, but you couldn't afford to go to the games.
No, we didn't venture very much outside of Hallville in the eighth grade, but certainly watched it.
Did you go to many games at Butler Fieldhouse?
I was in...
Like growing up as a kid, grade school, junior high school, that kind of thing?
Just watching it on
TV. Just watching on TV. That probably seemed like another world away, huh?
Yeah, it did.
Even though it was 5 or 10 miles.
Right.
Okay. Did that inspire you to, want to play on the high school team and so forth? I mean, as you said earlier, you didn't play until your senior year. You got cut 3 years from the high school team.
I did.
Were you not good enough, or did you feel like you were just getting overlooked?
Well, I felt I was good enough. I mean, I was, playing with these guys every day, in the alley. We were playing together in gyms and pickup games. But, apparently the coach didn't feel I was good enough. I mentioned playing in the alleys before, so... if you played outdoors, if you played street ball, there was a certain style that you had. So maybe it wasn't quite as fundamentally sound as maybe the coach would want you to be. So when I went out my freshman year, I got cut. When I went out my sophomore year and my junior year, I went out twice my junior year, and I got cut. And what I was told was that, I was basically a street ball player.
Ah, okay. Accurate description, you think? I mean, were you playing a less disciplined game or what, more individual than the coaches wanted then? Or
I think it was accurate. I mean, that's what I knew and how I played, and probably, again, some of the fundamentals of playing organized basketball I probably didn't have, at that time.
Do you recall, the disappointment that you felt or the impact it had on you to when you got cut like that over those years?
It was tough. It was tough. Again, because I felt like that I could play, and watching a lot of the guys that I knew that I was growing up with around Hallville, Steve Downing and Abner Nibbs, who was another good friend of mine that lived right up the street, watching those guys go out on the team and being their friend and not being there. Yeah, it was tough as a kid.
Come back as you're playing intramurals, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're tearing up intramurals.
I was averaging about probably 30 points a game in the intramural league.
Yeah. And all along, are you thinking, I'm preparing to play varsity? I want to be on the team. I want to be on the real team, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking the whole time that if I continued to work hard, and I talk to kids from time to time, and I mentor kids in my church, and I used to work with kids quite a bit. And I would tell kids that were having a difficult time, getting started in sports, that you just have to stay focused. You got to keep believing, but you got to keep working hard. There's no substitute for hard work.
So, yeah, getting that junior year getting cut, here's your third attempt to make Washington High School's team and you get cut again. At any point, did you ever think, I'm just giving this up or I'm not going to try out anymore, that kind of thing?
I never thought that, no. I mean, I was told that by other people that enough was enough.
Who told you that? I mean, just friends or?
Friends, sometimes maybe a teacher, here or there. But, I never thought that.
George McGinnis talks like, you would talk with him quite a bit and, express your frustration, disappointment, that kind of thing, why you're not on the team. And you're probably watching Washington play, thinking you could help them, that type of thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of my favorite pictures that I have of myself is in 1968 during the regional finals when Washington lost to Shortridge. And in the yearbook, there's a picture of the crowd standing up cheering, and I'm in the center of that picture with my coat and cap on, and we're cheering, and that was in 1968.
Uh-huh.
In 1969, I'm standing on the podium getting my championship ring.
Yeah, yeah. So you're in the stands in 68 when Washington loses the regional final. The next year, you're on the team in the state championship. So now there's something important happened that allowed you to make the team, and there was a coaching change, right? Jerry Oliver leaves, and Bill Green takes over as the varsity coach at Washington for the 68-69 season. What did he see in you that Jerry Oliver had not? I mean, what was different? Or was your game different?
I'm not sure. I guess you'd have to ask Coach Green. But, mm-hmm. The one thing that I'd say when I talk about Coach Green is, the guy saved my life.
Well, you think if you had not made the team that senior year, then your life would have turned out differently?
Much differently.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We wouldn't be sitting here talking.
Yeah.
I never would have gone to Tennessee Tech University. I'd had no way of going. Never would have played for the Pacers. Never would have held the positions that I've held in life. He saved my life.
What do you think you'd be doing today if you hadn't made the team your senior year at Washington?
Typically, the kids in my neighborhood, you would graduate from high school. I mean, that was my goal. I was the first member of my family to attend college. So typically, our goal at that time, it's 1960s, was to graduate from high school and become a productive citizen to go to the military like my brother did and who served in Vietnam, or to get a job in one of the plants, mm-hmm. General Motors or Ford or, somewhere and go to work.
PAC helps Washington to a state championship, and it pays off in more ways than one when One-on-One continues. Welcome back to One-on-One. I'm Mark Monteith. Kicking off the new year with someone who showed great resolve. Wayne Pack finally earned a spot on Washington's basketball team as a senior, then helped the Continentals to a state championship. That got him a scholarship to Tennessee Tech, not to mention an assist from the collection plate at church. Do you recall your feeling when you found that you made the team as a senior at Washington High School?
It was the best feeling that I've had in my life, just making the team, and then having the opportunity that during the preseason and so forth that Bill Green decided to put me in the starting lineup. I can remember back then, there weren't Nike tennis shoes and things like that. There was one shoe, and that was the Chuck Taylor Converse,
right?
Which I couldn't afford, by the way. So I would wear just some other brand of shoe that kids call buddies. If you didn't wear Converse, then you had on buddies. And so it wasn't until I played that I remember when I went to the equipment room and they gave us our shoes and we were supposed to put them in our lockers. I didn't put my shoes in my lockers, in my locker. I took my shoes home and I set them up on the dresser and I stayed up all night staring at those Chuck Taylor Converse.
Staring at your shoes, huh?
Staring at my shoes.
Yeah.
First pair of Converse I'd ever had.
So your team at Washington, you go through the season not only undefeated, but you dominate every game. I looked back through the list, and it's hard to find games where you're even challenged your senior year until you get to the Final Four. And then in that semifinal game, you're playing Marion High School for the state the afternoon games. You win at 61-60. And you scored 11 points in that game. What do you recall from that game? Because it almost came undone right there. I mean, I think you had to come from behind to win that game.
We did. We were behind something that we hadn't experienced a lot of. I remember Bill Green calling a timeout, and he just said, you guys got to get it going. You got to get out there. And he called out a couple of plays, and we went out and executed those. And we wound up, coming back in that game. It was touch and go. I thought it was over for us.
Yeah, George McGinnis tells me you hit some key baskets in that game.
I did. I hit, I believe, there were three shots in a row when I brought the ball down the court and they were packing back into a zone to try and stop Big George and Steve. And so I came across the 10-second line. I go, well, if you guys going to stay back there, then I'll go ahead and shoot it. So to my surprise, They went in, and so we wound up, coming back and either tying the game or taking a 1-point lead and really tightening it up. Mm-hmm. And then from there, then we turned it back over to George and Steve and Jim Arnold, and we went on to win.
And then you beat Gary Tollefson for the state championship that night, 79-76. You had 13 points in that game. George had 35. How did you approach the games then? You got this All-American in George McGinnis. You have Steve Downing, who's going to go on and play at IU and become a first-round draft pick at the Celtics. I mean, is it just, hey, throw the ball to those guys? Or was it, how were you guys set up to play? What was the system?
That's what made that team so special, Mark. And I would venture to say that I don't think that there's been a big man tandem in the history of Indiana high school basketball like George McGinnis and Steve Downey. I mean, just go and check the record. I mean, these guys were just tremendous, tremendous players, athletes, very, very talented, and that's why we were unbeatable, was because of them. But we also had Louis Day on that team, who was a starting guard next to me, who was probably the best athlete on that team. George McGinnis was also an all-American football player as well as basketball. A lot mm-hmm. of people don't know that. But this guy, Louis Day, was just a tremendous athlete, starting guard on the basketball team, starting running back on the football team, and was a world-class 100-yard and 200-yard sprinter, and was the anchor leg for the 4x4 relay. And he went on to IU to play football and run track. And then Jim Arnold was a guy who was a wingman and was just our outside threat. So you put that combination together, and it was just, well, apparently it was unbeatable.
Yeah, it was unbeatable, as history shows. I have some kind of memory that you guys had a tradition of letting Jim Arnold take the first shot in every game.
Well, that's because that's what Jim Arnold wanted.
That was his tradition, huh?
Yeah. He wanted to take the first shot, and so, we said, okay, fine, Jim. We'll go down. Whatever we got to do, you get the first shot.
Okay, winning the state championship, you beat Gary Tollefson, you finished the season undefeated. What was it like? What was that experience like? What was it like at school, the following Monday, that kind of thing?
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, we everyone was so excited. I mean, and again, just the fact that, we went undefeated, that's just something special. And when you talk to some of our classmates, that went to Washington at that time who were there, or maybe, they might not have graduated in 69, but they were there. And one thing that people talk about, was that state championship, because it was just so special when you go undefeated. But there was a pep rally at school, on that Monday, pretty much lasted all day. People were just, nobody went to class. And for weeks after that, the environment was just electric. I mean, it wasn't the same.
What kind of meaning did that have to the community? Now, Washington had won a state championship just 4 years earlier, so it's not like it's a brand new experience, but what does that kind of thing do for a community like Washington High School?
Well, I think it uplifts you. I mean, everyone in the neighborhood, the one thing I recall is going to church on Sunday. We always had to get up and go to church. I don't care what happened, win a state championship or not. And so my first cousin, Steve Stanfield, was on that team. He was a reserve player, and his mother and my mother were sisters. And so Steve and I went to church on that Sunday morning, and I remember the pastor calling us up front, and I'm like, well, what's going on here? So he calls us up front, and he takes up a collection from the congregation. And I remember feeling, so embarrassed, because we're standing up front, and these folks are coming up putting money, in this plate. And he takes up this collection for us and said that it was for our college fund.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, what happened to that money? I mean, you wind up getting a scholarship to Tennessee Tech.
I think I wound up spending mine.
They just gave you money, huh?
Yeah.
You remember how much it was?
It wasn't very much.
Once again, Pac battles his way onto the basketball court, this time with the Pacers, when one-on-one continues. Back on One-on-One, Mark Monteith here with former Washington High School star and Pacer, Wayne Pack. He sat out a year after completing his college career, but Pack proved once again he could meet a challenge when he got a tryout with the Pacers and made the team.
But you do get a scholarship to Tennessee Tech. How does that come about?
Well, having only played 1 year at Washington and even being on that great team, not a whole lot of people know who I was. I mean, I have a history where people could have watched me, you know, throughout high school, like a lot of kids. So I really had no scholarship offers or anything upon graduation. I had visited down at Indiana Central, which was the University of Indianapolis at that time, Angus Nicholson.
Yeah, well, it's Indianapolis now. It was Indiana Central then.
Indiana Central then.
Yeah.
And I had visited there, and you know, they told me that they were interested in me coming there, but they didn't have, you know, full-time scholarships, and they didn't have a whole lot of money. So they told me that I could, you know, live at home and that they would pay for my books and, you know, a few other things. I don't think tuition was included in it. And so that was the only real conversation that I had had with any school at all. And then in the late summer, I received a phone call, and it was a coach from Tennessee Tech, and he wanted me to come down and try out.
So this is what, August or something? Or
this was probably mid to late July.
Okay.
So I was starting to get nervous and starting to think about the Army or the Navy or, you okay. know, what I was going to do.
And you get this call out of the blue from Tennessee Tech, and, you know, that's not allowed today, but I know back then people would have tryouts for scholarships, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. What did you have to do to try out? Just go play with their players?
Yeah. They asked me to come down, and I went down and located in Cookeville, Tennessee. It was hot and in the middle of the summer, and I arrived down there, and the coach, we went over to the gymnasium, and I went down and got dressed in the locker room, and all of a sudden there's some other guys coming in, some of the other players that were already playing for Tennessee Tech, and they nodded their head and said hello, and I nodded my head. They didn't even know who I was. So we went up to the court and loosened up, warmed up, and then we started playing. And the coach and assistant coach and a couple of other people were sitting over on the sidelines, and we played probably for, I'd say, an hour to an hour and a half. And after we were done playing, we went back to the coach's office, and he said, well, we want to offer you a scholarship, a full scholarship, everything paid for, if you'll sign right here.
That simple, huh?
Yeah.
And you signed, obviously.
I signed.
Well, that's got to be a great moment, too. You go home and tell mom and dad you got a scholarship.
Exactly. They were very, very excited. My entire family was just thrilled. I just felt like that, you know, this was what I always wanted. You know, I just wanted an opportunity to, you know, prove myself that, you know, that I could play, and I could play with, you know, the best guys out there. You know, I always felt that way. When I walked into a gymnasium, you know, I feel like you got to have confidence in yourself. And when I walked into a gymnasium, I wasn't a big guy, as I told you. You know, when I was a senior at Washington, I was 5'11" and probably at that time weighed 140 pounds. But I always felt like that I was one of the best players in the gym when I walked into the gym.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was.
And you're the first in your family to go to college.
I am.
So at Tennessee Tech, my notes tell me that you led the team in scoring and assists as a sophomore and senior. What happened your junior year?
I think I had a junior flops.
Okay.
You know, I had a great sophomore year. I made the first team all Ohio Valley Conference. You know, everybody was at that time now telling me how great I was.
Okay.
So I guess I started believing it.
Yeah.
And I came back my junior year, probably didn't try as hard, feeling like I had somewhat made it just a little bit. And I felt a little bit off my game and didn't play quite as well as I should have, you know, my junior year.
That's interesting. In a brief period there, you go from not being on a team and, you know, dying to get on a team. Then you get on a team and you win a state championship, and then you get a scholarship. And then you even actually go through a period where it kind of goes to your head a little bit. You think you haven't made, and then you got to make a kind of regenerate yourself again and regain your foothold, so to speak. So you kind of experienced the whole gamut there in about 4 or 5 year period.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're 20 years old, you know, so. And you're looking around, and, you know, now I'm, you know, like coming off my sophomore year, you know, I'm leading the team in scoring. I'm leading the team in assists. I'd set a school record of 16 assists in one game. And so, you know, I just felt like, hey, man, you know, I mean, you're really doing it now, you know. So And I probably, like I said, I probably didn't work as hard as I should have, you know, over the summer leading into my junior year. You know, yeah, it was going to my head a little bit. You know, I mean, we played Western Kentucky when I was a sophomore, and they had Jim McDaniels and Clarence Glover. They were ranked probably, I think, third in the nation and went to the Final Four. And, you know, and I scored 28 points against them, and we went down to them by probably only 4 or 5 points. So, yeah, I was feeling pretty good about myself.
So you graduate from Tennessee Tech, and I know you play 21 games for the Pacers, but there's, you know, what happens when you get out? Are you in training camp with the Pacers that next year, or?
No, actually, when I graduated, I received, well, at that time, the NBA draft was like, you know, 12 rounds or
right.
something like that today.
Yeah.
It's
two now.
Well, it was 12 then or something like that. And then they had a supplemental draft even after that, if you can believe that. And so I either got a call or I look in the paper, and I was drafted in the supplemental draft by the Philadelphia 76ers. And I'm going, what? And so that year I go out to Philadelphia and try out for the 76ers. You know, didn't have a prayer, you know, of making the team from the supplemental draft. I think at that time they still had Hal Greer and some of those guys.
The guys you had grown up watching.
Yeah. And so I got released after probably midway through training camp. And I came back to Indianapolis, and I went to work for the boys' clubs where, you know, I had grown up.
What were you doing for them? I mean, are you putting your degree to use, or?
I was the phys ed director.
Okay.
Started out as the phys ed director.
Okay. Then how do you get with the Pacers then?
Well, the next year, after working for a year, you know, I stayed in shape, you know, over the summer. And I went to my good buddy, George, and I said, hey, man, look, I said, you know, and plus I'm playing with these guys all during the summer. Same thing, you know, it was deja vu, you know, all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to George and I said, man, you know, I can play this game, you know, and you know, I need your help. You know, I mean, would you go to Bobby Leonard and ask him if I can come out and try out for, you know, for the Pacers? And so George said, yeah, you know, I'll go talk to him. And so he goes and talks to Bobby Leonard, and I'm talking with Steve Downing, and, you know, Steve Downing is home during the summer. And after, you know, he had played that year with the Celtics,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to the Chrismore house every morning, and we're meeting up there, and we're just Steve and I locked in the gym, and we're playing until we can't play anymore. You know, this is every single day. And so Bobby Leonard says, yeah, you know, he can try out. So training camp starts, and I quit my job at the boys club. I probably had at that time probably $700 in the bank. And I paid my rent in my apartment over on the west side of Indianapolis, and said my prayers, and I went out for the Pacers.
And you made it.
I did.
How did that compare to making the team at Washington High School? I mean, that's...
It was just another one of those highlights that it's hard to compare the two. You know, playing in the ABA or the NBA is something that I think every kid dreams about, you know, from the time that you pick up a basketball. So I think I stayed up all that night looking at my Pacer uniform. I took it back to my apartment, and I laid it all out on the couch. You know, I had my warm-up and my jersey and my shorts and all of that. I think I stayed up all night looking at that.
This is, what I think, the 74-75 season?
Yes.
And who did you have to beat out, or how did it break down that you make the team? I'm trying to remember, you know, George is on the team, of course, and the Pacers are kind of in transition. Mm-hmm. Trying to think of the other guards at that time that you had to beat out. And
well, Billy Keller, Kevin Joyce, and Don Boozy were on the team. So yeah. I had no thoughts of trying to beat them out. But that year, the Pacers had drafted, I believe the order went Lenny Elmore, who was an All-American from Maryland. I think Billy Knight, number two, from Pittsburgh, and a guy by the name of Bruce Sky King was a small guard out of Pan American University. And so he was a third round draft pick, and I was walking on. So I thought to myself, you know, hey, you know, this is a long shot, but at least you got a chance.
You wore number 21 in high school. What'd you wear in college?
14.
And you wore number 6 with the Pacers, and you became known as Six Pack. How did that come about? Was there a reason? Or, I mean, did somebody give you that number specifically? Or
Well, you know, Mark, everybody had to have a nickname, you know. So, you know, Darnell was Darbo. George was Jiffo. You know, Bob Nedelecki was Netto. Kevin Joyce was KJ, you know. So Don Boozy was
Boo.
Boo. So everybody had to have a nickname. So I guess, you know, Six and Pack kind of goes together, you know, and if you like beer. And so I actually started out wearing number 12. 12-pack probably would have worked too. But then everybody started calling me Six-Pack because, again, if you played, you had to have a nickname. I guess that was the rule.
So you took number six.
Yeah.
What was your role on the team, and what do you remember just from the 21 games you played for the Pacers?
Well, you know, I was actually a reserve player, so I really didn't get an opportunity to play a whole lot. You know, so I would typically get a chance if, you know, if someone was tired or if somebody twisted an ankle or something like that. But, you know, it was just a great time being there. I felt like that if I had been given, you know, more of an opportunity to play and been given the playing time, I feel like that things would have turned out, you know, much, much differently. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that wasn't my call.
Right. Yeah, you got to have some slick stories. What stories stand out in your memory from the time you spent with the team?
Well, actually, you know, I was afraid of Slick, you know, probably like a lot of the other guys. I mean, you know, guys who have been around him for a long time weren't afraid of him, certainly. But, you know, Slick was just this guy that was just, you know, fiery, full of energy, and man, was he tenacious, I mean, about everything. So when you were in the locker room with him, I mean, you know, especially if you were behind or you hadn't played well, you know, that wasn't a place where you wanted to be. But he was just one of those guys that I really enjoyed the time that I was around him. It's special when I see him now, and I think the same for him when he sees me. He always tells Wayne Pack stories and things about how much I hustled and, you know, things like that. So still a special memory.
For that period that you are with the Pacers, that had to be just a great thing to, you know, be in your home city. You know, just you're talking about 5-6 years after winning the state championship, and you're a Pacer, man. That had to be.
It was unbelievable. I mean, it was out of this world. Your friends, your family, you know, all of the guys that you grew up with, you know, girlfriends that turned you down.
Are coming back to you now.
Yeah, I think so. No, it was absolutely fantastic, you know. And then, you know, just, you know, having a chance to say that you played against, you know, the likes of, you know, Dr. J, George Gervin, Moses Malone, you know, guys like that who are on the list of the top 50 players to ever play the game. And to say that you played against these guys, you were on the court with them, and you competed with them is something that a lot of folks don't have an opportunity to say.
Pack's brief career with the Pacers ends, but the lessons he learned along the way in his basketball career serve him well in the corporate world. When One-on-One continues. We're back on One-on-One. I'm Mark Monteith. Starting the new year off right with former Washington Continental and Pacer Wayne Pack. Pack's career with the Pacers lasted just 21 games, but he didn't let the end of his basketball life hold them back. He quickly found success in the corporate world.
So you played, like I said, 21 games for the Pacers. You know, your stats were modest. You're, you know, brought in as a defender a lot of times. How did it end, and why did it end?
Well, it ended, you know, when the Pacers had brought Johnny Newman in, who was a big guard out of, I think, Ole Miss.
Yeah, 6'6".
Yeah.
Shooter.
A big, I don't know if he led the nation in scoring.
I think he did, yeah.
If he didn't, he had to be close. So I felt like that the, you know, handwriting was on the wall, but I didn't want to believe it, you know, and so I just continued to practice and work hard. But I walked in the locker room, and my equipment wasn't in my locker.
Uh-oh.
So at that time, you know, I guess a light bulb hadn't come on yet. And so I started going around, and I'm trying to find Davy Craig, who, you know, was our trainer. I'm like, hey, Davy, I'm like, where's my equipment? And I'm thinking that maybe it's still in the dryer, or, you know, they used to put it in this bag and throw it in the dryer and the wash in the dryer. And so finally I find Davy, and he's in the training room, and he and Slick are in there, and he says, "Hey, Wayne, come on in." And I believe George was there. I can't remember. I think he might have been there for support. Then that's when the light bulb came on that it's over. This is it.
Slick gave you the word, huh?
Yeah.
I got to believe, knowing Slick, though, he did it in a human kind of way. I mean,
absolutely, yeah. He did. I mean, he made me feel very, very good about everything that had happened, everything that I had accomplished, and, he did.
And you wind up playing in Barcelona, Spain.
I did.
How does that happen?
The phone rang. The phone rang, and there was a guy who was recruiting for the Iberian Superstars. That was a team in Barcelona. It was a league that started up, I guess, the year before, maybe even that year. This league was pretty much all American. It was mostly guys that had played in the NBA and in the ABA. And so the guy on the other end of the phone says, "Hey, you want to come over to Europe and play in Barcelona?" He said, "We got a contract for you. We're willing to sign you up." There was another player who had gotten injured for the year, was out for the year. And I said, absolutely. So he called me, I think, on a Thursday. And that Sunday, I was on a plane to Barcelona.
What was your salary with the Pacers?
Well, I signed the minimum, which at that time was $50,000.
$50,000.
Yeah.
Still not bad, though.
Yeah. In 1974, no, it wasn't bad.
And then you go to Barcelona, and what was that experience like, living in Spain all of a sudden?
It was exciting. I mean, it was the first time that, I'd been out of the country. We traveled to, the other teams were located in Geneva, Switzerland, in Brussels, Belgium, Frankfurt, Germany, Tel Aviv, Israel. So I was traveling, the world and having the opportunity to see, things I'd never seen before. So I was trying to take it all in. And at the same time, I guess in the back of my mind, I was hoping that, hey, if you can do well over here, then again, maybe somebody hears about it. But this was a long way away from home.
So at the end of that season, you come back. I mean, do you know then that, hey, I'm done with basketball, or are you still holding out hope that there's going to be another opportunity for you?
Yeah, I went and tried out for the Seattle Supersonics. I got a call, and they asked me to come out, or someone asked me to come out. I can't even remember who. And during workouts during that summer over at the Fall Creek Y over on the west side, we were there. Quinn Buckner's there. Just all kind of players are there. And we're George McGinnis. We're all working out, and I twisted my ankle. I mean, and I twisted it badly. And so it was only maybe a week before I was to go out to Seattle. And I went out there knowing that, there's little chance that at probably 80% or 85% or whatever that I was going to make it. But I gave it my best. And after that, I said, hey, move on with life. I felt good about what I had done.
So what's the next step then? You're now obviously in the corporate world. How does that transition work?
It worked out great. I think, sports teaches you a lot about hard work and preparation, about teamwork, and that goes a long way in the corporate world. So I took a position in human resources with RCA at the time in 1978. And I've been in HR ever since. And today I work for Brightpoint, which is a company that does logistics services out in Plainfield, Indiana. And I'm the senior VP of human resources.
Looking back now on your high school experience, getting cut those 3 years, do you see positives in that? That obviously fueled something within you. You didn't quit. Do you look back on that now as maybe that was good for me? Or do you still regret Absolutely. Not being able to play, more high school basketball?
Not at all. I mean, I look back on it and, to me, it made me who I am. We all have adversity in life. And so to me, what really determines what you do and where you go is your ability to face into that adversity and to overcome it. And so, I look back at that and, I always said I'm going to prove to everyone who said that I couldn't play, that I can play. And the more that somebody said I couldn't, like when I would get cut my sophomore year, the harder that I would play. The more games I would play, the longer that I would stay in the gym and what have you. So I look back on it with fond memories. Yeah.
So what was in you that gave you that attitude? I mean, was it something instilled at home? Or, I mean, is there any explanation for why you had that attitude?
Well, my parents were working people. And, they always just told us to do the best that we could do, and don't give up. They never gave up. So it was my upbringing. It was something, that was instilled in me when I was a kid. I've always just had a competitive spirit, and I think it drove me in my professional life, in the corporate, the corporate world is not easy either.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of competition there, and you want to be the best, and you want your company to be the best. That takes a lot of hard work. And so, and you get knocked down, and so you just have to keep going. And I tell kids that all the time.
Do you, you say you've kind of lost track of Louis Day, but do you guys get together every so often for reunions for that team, or has the school brought you back?
Every so often, yeah, we have. We were inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame last year, and I believe that all of our players were at that induction. Except for Louis, but we get together from time to time, and George and I talk regularly. Steve stays in touch, we've gotten together several times. We had a cookout at my house several years ago now, and then the next year we did one at Steve Downing's house, and we probably had every guy there except for maybe one or two and their wives. It was just special. We often talk that, hey, what if we had lost that last game?
Yeah.
We had wound up 30-1 instead of 31-0. We probably wouldn't have been having those cookouts.
That's right.
Some 30 years later.
I doubt Gary Tolleson is getting together to celebrate finishing second,
Right, exactly.
Oh, I've got a theme question I've asked everybody. Particularly in the years right after you stopped playing, when you were sleeping at night, would you have dreams about playing basketball?
Well, I have dreams about playing basketball now.
Do you?
Yeah.
What happens? Okay. What happens?
Oftentimes, it's like my feet are in quicksand, and I can't move and keep up. It's always something disastrous, and I don't know why. It's like having a dream when somebody's always chasing you or something like that. And I wonder about that time. I can't get the ball to go in the hoop or something, like there's a lid on it. So I don't know why that is. But, basketball was, I think, such a big part of my life. And it's done so much for me. And I think a lot of the folks that you talk to, you look back on it, and, again, you feel like that, it made you who you were. And, a lot of the things that have happened after basketball, I think doors have been opened for me because of, what I did in the game of basketball.
One-on-One with Wayne Pack continues in a moment.
Welcome back to One-on-One. I'm Mark Monteith. Hey, thanks to today's guest, Wayne Pack. Even if you don't know the name, you should be able to appreciate the story. Not many kids would try out for their high school basketball team a fourth time after being cut three times. But Pack's perseverance paid off in a big way, not only for Washington High School or for Tennessee Tech, but for himself in the real world. He not only achieved a successful career in human resources, his personal life has gone well too. He's been married 24 years and has four children and three grandchildren. Not bad for a kid from Hallville, huh? Now, do not forget, if you missed part of this episode, want to hear it again and again, or want to catch one of the other conversations with Indiana sports legends, all you got to do is go to the website at 1070thefan.com. You can also email me at mark@1070thefan.com. And if you're up to it, you can catch another conversation with an Indiana sports personality next week, right here on 1070 The Fan.